Chapter 32. I suppose I must go with this fellow to our imperturbable friend at the police station. I suppose, said Eugene, there is no help for it. Do you believe him? I believe him to be a thorough rascal. But he may tell the truth, for his own purpose, and for this occasion only. It doesn't look like it. He doesn't, said Eugene. But neither is his late partner, whom he denounces, a prepossessing person. The firm are cutthroat shepherds both, in appearance. I should like to ask him one thing. The subject of this conference sat leering at the ashes, trying with all his might to overhear what was said, but feigning abstraction as the governors both glanced at him. You mentioned, twice, I think, a daughter of this Hexham's, said Eugene, aloud. You don't mean to imply that she had any guilty knowledge of the crime? The honest man, after considering how his answer might affect the fruits of the sweat of his brow, replied, unreservedly, no, I don't. And you implicate no other person? It ain't what I implicate, it's what Gaffer implicated, was the dogged and determined answer. I don't pretend to know more than that his words to me was, I done it. Those was his words. I must see this out, Mortimer, whispered Eugene, rising. How shall we go? Let us walk, whispered Lightwood, and give this fellow time to think of it. Having exchanged the question and answer, they prepared themselves for going out, and Mr. Riderhood rose. While extinguishing the candles, Lightwood, quite as a matter of course, took up the glass from which that honest gentleman had drunk, and coolly tossed it under the grate, where it fell shivering in two fragments. Now, if you will take the lead, said Lightwood, Mr. Rayburn and I will follow. You know where to go, I suppose? I suppose I do, Lawyer Lightwood. Take the lead, then. The waterside character pulled his drowned cap over his ears with both hands, and making himself more round-shouldered than nature had made him, by the sullen and persistent slouch with which he went down the stairs, round by the Temple Church, across the Temple into Whitefriars, and so on by the waterside streets. Look at his hangdog air, said Lightwood, following. It strikes me rather as a hangman air, returned Eugene. He has undeniable intentions that way. They said little else as they followed. He went on before them as an ugly fate might have done, and they kept him in view, and would have been glad enough to lose sight of him. But on he went before them, always at the same distance, and the same rate. Aslant against the hard implacable weather and the rough wind, he was no more to be driven back than hurried forward, but held on like an advancing destiny. There came, when they were about midway on their journey, a heavy rush of hail, which in a few minutes pelted the streets clear, and whitened them. It made no difference to him. A man's life being to be taken, and the price of it got, the hailstones to arrest the purpose must lie larger and deeper than those. He crunched through them, leaving marks in the fast-melting slush, that were mere shapeless holes. One might have fancied, following, that the very fashion of humanity had departed from his feet. The blast went by, and the moon contended with the fast-flying clouds, and the wild disorder reigning up there made the pitiful little tumults in the streets of no account. It was not that the wind swept all the brawlers into places of shelter, as it had swept the hail still lingering in heaps, wherever there was refuge for it, but that it seemed as if the streets were absorbed by the sky, and the night were all in the air. If he has had time to think of it, said Eugene, he has not had time to think better of it, or differently of it, if that's better. There is no sign of drawing back in him. And as I recollect this place, we must be close upon the corner where we alighted that night. Apostrophe, in fact, a few abrupt turns brought them to the riverside, where they had slipped about among the stones, and where they now slip more, the wind coming against them in slants and flaws, across the tide and the windings of the river, in a furious way. With that habit of getting under the lee of any shelter which waterside characters acquire, the waterside character at present in question led the way to the lee side of the six jolly fellowship porters before he spoke. "Look round here, Lawyer Lightwood, at them red curtains. It's the fellowships. The house, as I told you, wouldn't run away. And has it run away?" ... Not showing himself much impressed by this remarkable confirmation of the informer's evidence, Lightwood inquired what other business they had there. "I wish you to see the fellowships for yourself, Lawyer Lightwood, that you might judge whether I'm a liar. And now I'll see Gaffer's window for myself, that we may know whether he's at home." ... With that, he crept away. "He'll come back, I suppose?" ... murmured Lightwood. "Eh? And go through with it," murmured Eugene. "He came back after a very short interval indeed. Gaffer's out, and his boat's out. His daughter's at home, sitting a-looking at the fire. But there's some supper getting ready, so Gaffer's expected. I can find what move he's upon, easy enough, presently." ... Then he beckoned and led the way again, and they came to the police station, still as clean, and cool and steady as before, saving that the flame of its lamp, being but a lamp flame, and only attached to the force as an outsider, flickered in the wind. Also, within doors, Mr. Inspector was at his studies as of yore. He recognized the friends the instant they reappeared, but their reappearance had no effect on his composure. Not even the circumstance that Riderhood was their conductor moved him, otherwise than that as he took a dip of ink he seemed, by a settlement of his chin in his stock, to propound to that personage, without looking at him, the question, "What have you been up to, last?" ... Mortimer Lightwood asked him, would he be so good as look at those notes? Handing him Eugene's. Having read the first few lines, Mr. Inspector mounted to that, for him, extraordinary pitch of emotion that he said, "Does either of you two gentlemen happen to have a pinch of snuff about him?" ... Finding that neither had, he did quite as well without it, and read on. "Have you heard these read?" ... He then demanded of the honest man. "No," said Riderhood. "Then you had better hear them." ... And so read them aloud, in an official manner. "Are these notes correct now, as to the information you bring here, and the evidence you mean to give?" ... He asked, when he had finished reading. "They are. They are as correct," returned Mr. Riderhood, "as I am. I can't say more than that for him." ... "I'll take this man myself, sir," said Mr. Inspector to Lightwood. Then to Riderhood, "Is he at home? Where is he? What's he doing? You have made it your business to know all about him, no doubt." ... Riderhood said what he did know, and promised to find out in a few minutes what he didn't know. "Stop," said Mr. Inspector, "not till I tell you. We mustn't look like business. Would you two gentlemen object to making a pretense of taking a glass of something in my company at the fellowships? Well-conducted house, and highly respectable landlady." ... They replied that they would be happy to substitute a reality for the pretense, which, in the main, appeared to be as one with Mr. Inspector's meaning. "Very good," said he, taking his hat from its peg, and putting a pair of handcuffs in his pocket, as if they were his gloves. "Reserve." ... saluted. "You know where to find me?" ... again saluted. "Riderhood, when you have found out concerning his coming home, come round to the window of Cozy, tap twice at it, and wait for me. Now, gentlemen, apostrophe, as the three went out together, and Riderhood slouched off from under the trembling lamp his separate way, Lightwood asked the officer what he thought of this. Mr. Inspector replied, with due generality and reticence, that it was always more likely that a man had done a bad thing than that he hadn't. That he himself had several times reckoned up Gaffer, but had never been able to bring him to a satisfactory criminal total. That if this story was true, it was only in part true. That the two men, very shy characters, would have been jointly, and pretty equally in it, apostrophe, but that this man had spotted the other, to save himself, and get the money. And I think, apostrophe, added Mr. Inspector, in conclusion, that if all goes well with him, he's in a tolerable way of getting it. But as this is the fellowship's, gentlemen, where the lights are, I recommend dropping the subject. You can't do better than be interested in some lime works anywhere down about North Fleet, and doubtful whether some of your lime don't get into bad company as it comes up in barges. Apostrophe, you hear Eugene? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Lightwood, over his shoulder. You are deeply interested in lime. Apostrophe, without lime, apostrophe, returned that unmoved barrister at law, my existence would be illuminated by a ray of hope. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.